This is the Breaker.News podcast for February 11th, 2018. Welcome. I'm Bob Mackin, publisher of the Breaker.News and host of the Breaker.News podcast. The Breaker is your source for news, opinion, and analysis about British Columbia issues, institutions, and influencers. Later, I'll tell you how you can support the Breaker. On this edition, regular features such as the Is It Just Me commentary, Around the Rim, headlines from around the Pacific Rim, the Korean Peninsula Olympic Edition, Cascadia Calling, headlines from around the Pacific Northwest. The Big Deal feature, this week, the legacy of the Vancouver 2010 Winter Olympics luge tragedy and one man's battle with post-traumatic stress disorder. And the Breaker will award a virtual Nanaimo bar to those who made a difference. Now, is it just me? Is it just me, or is it time to stop romanticizing Vancouver's 2010 Winter Olympics, which opened 8 years ago on February 12, 2010? Is it also time to warn our neighbors to the east in Alberta, where Calgary is exploring a bid to bring the 2026 Winter Olympics back to North America? Many fondly remember the Vancouver Olympics for Wayne Gretzky lighting the cauldron at the start, and for Sidney Crosby for scoring the golden goal at the end. Vancouver stopped being a no-fun city, once and for all. But that's what the governments of the day and the organizers want you to remember. So, what really happened? In no particular order. The Auditor General never did a final report. The coroner never held hearings into the preventable death of Nodar Kumertashvili. The medic who treated the luge athlete from Georgia suffered PTSD and became suicidal. The organizing committee board minutes and accounting files are sealed from the public view until 2025. Many files are restricted until 2111. No, that's not a typo. The legacy venues rely on subsidies. Hiring buses from as far away as Florida for the games cost an extra $50 million. Foreign criminals used stolen credit cards to buy thousands of tickets to scalp online. The billion-dollar Olympic Village went belly up. Invasive plant species were introduced to Cypress Mountain. Sexual assaults increased in Vancouver. A man was lucky to survive after his throat was slit by an assailant on the Granville Mall. The CEO of VanOck, John Furlong, wrote a book afterward and revealed a fishy deal with the Russians for IOC votes. But he didn't tell the truth of when he really came to Canada or why he left the first time. And the housing crisis, is a direct result of successful Olympic-related marketing to China by Canada. But let's pretend none of that ever happened because of host Canada's record 14 gold medals. So the time couldn't be better to call a truce in the tit-for-tat Notley NDP government boycott of BC wine after the Horgan NDP government put more barriers in the way of Kinder Morgan's oil pipeline expansion. If the South Koreans and the North Koreans can march together at the Olympics as they did in Pyeongchang and play on the same hockey team, then why not British Columbians and Albertans? Is it time for the provinces to declare the Rocky Mountains a de-rhetoric zone and come together to discuss why Albertans should think twice and think thrice about an Olympic bid? The costs of a 2026 Games in Calgary would far outweigh the benefits. Just ask British Columbians, 8 years later, who are paying more for electricity, more for car insurance, more for housing, and even beer. What was the real story of the 2010 Winter Games? Stay tuned to this podcast for two reasons. The Breaker will introduce you to Terence Kozakar, the medic who rushed to treat Nodar Kumertashvili after the crash on the Whistler Sliding Center. And The Breaker will tell you how you can get a free copy of the ebook, Red Mittens and Red Ink, The Vancouver Olympics, written by yours truly. Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for a special Olympic edition of Around the Rim, featuring headlines from around the Korean Peninsula. In the Korea Times, Jing Min Ho reports that NBC analyst relieved from Olympic coverage for offending Koreans. During the opening ceremony, Joshua Cooper Ramo said that every Korean will tell you that Japan is a cultural and technological and economic example that has been so important to their own transformation. NBC apologized on air and in a letter to the Pyeongchang Organizing Committee. Japan occupied Korea from 1910 to 1945. The Chosun Ilbo's Lee Kil-sung reports that she won't come to Olympics closing ceremony. Pyeongchang will pass the Olympic flag to Beijing, the host of the 2022 Winter Games, but the leader of the world's most populous country will not be there. Instead of Xi Jinping, China is sending Vice Premier Liu Yandong. She is the highest-ranking female official in China and is in charge of science, technology, culture, and education. Also expected in the Chinese delegation are Chai Qi, Beijing's Communist Party secretary, and Chen Qining, the mayor of Beijing. Yonhap News Agency reports that the Unification Ministry denies report about mask worn by North Korean cheerleaders. The Unification Ministry denied local news reports that North Korean cheerleaders wore masks depicting the late North Korean dictator Kim Il-sung at a hockey game. The joint South and North Korean team met Switzerland in the women's tournament. The masks bore the image of a man, and a local media outlet reported that it was an image of the North's revered founder when he was young. That report sparked criticism that the North was using the Olympic event for propaganda purposes. But the South's Unification Ministry said the report was based on an incorrect assumption. Officials said it was just an image of a good-looking man, and the mask was worn when the cheerleaders sang a North Korean song called Whistle, whose lyrics are about a man's unrequited love for a female neighbor. That's Around the Rims, Special Olympic Edition. Now it's time for Cascadia Calling on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast. First item is a little bit north of Cascadia proper, but it is relevant nonetheless to British Columbia and Washington. Alex DeMarbin in the Anchorage Daily News reports that ConocoPhillips sold LNG plant for $10 million bargain price, borough mayor says. Kenai Peninsula's mayor said that the Kenai LNG plant sold for a fraction of the property's assessed value on January 31st to Endeavor, Alaska's main supplier of gasoline and jet fuel. Endeavor is based in San Antonio, Texas, and used to be known as Tesoro. ConocoPhillips would not discuss the price. The plant opened in 1969 and was once the world's largest. It was also the first to serve Asia, but is small by today's standards. Cairo 7 in Seattle reports that Forest Service to allow Canadian company to do exploratory drilling near Mount St. Helens. Ascot USA has to jump through more hoops to drill a hard rock mine near the volcano. The Bureau of Land Management must still issue prospecting and exploration permits. The company wants to collect samples of copper, gold, molybdenum, and silver. The drilling sites would be 12 miles northeast of Mount St. Helens. Washington Democrat Senator Maria Cantwell called the decision short-sighted and it threatens the recreation economy. In 1980, 57 people died when Mount St. Helens erupted. And finally, in the Oregonian, Eater Campuzano reports, rowdy customers ruin Max's Tavern tradition, benches off limits for Sweet Caroline sing-along. A storied University of Oregon area bar announced that its closing tradition of blaring Neil Diamond's Sweet Caroline for a parting sing-along will include 100% less standing on benches due to atrocious behavior by patrons over the last few years. New Max's Tavern owner Ward Fairbairn announced the end of the ritual on Facebook, saying that some doofus had tossed glassware at another patron recently, knocking the person unconscious. This comes as the Register Guard reports that the bar is also the defendant of a $3.7 million lawsuit by a Eugene-area musician who says he suffered severe cuts after a bartender asked him to separate a metal drink shaker and a pint glass, shattering the latter. Bartenders typically alternate between Journey's Don't Stop Believing and Semisonic's Closing Time after the Diamond tune plays out, signaling the fact that folks don't have to go home, but they can't stay at the bar much longer. That's Cascadia calling for this week on the Breaker.News podcast. This is the Big Deal feature on the Breaker.News podcast. 8 years ago, on February 12, 2010, the Vancouver Olympics opened under a cloud of sorrow. At 10:50 a.m., Nodar Kermatashvili of Georgia flew off his luge sled at 136 kilometers an hour and crashed into a steel post at the Whistler Sliding Center. Medic Terence Kozakar rushed to treat the 21-year-old. Kermatashvili was taken by ambulance to the Athletes Village Polyclinic and died an hour later. This is what it sounded like when IOC spokesman Mark Adams and IOC President Jacques Rogge made the announcement to the world press.
It is with great regret that we confirm the death of the Georgian luge athlete Nodar Kermatashvili during the final training session at the Whistler Sliding Center this morning. Mr. Kermatashvili died after crashing on the last corner of the course during training.
The IOC is in deep mourning. Here you have a young athlete who lost his life in pursuing his passion. He had a dream to participate in the Olympic Games. He trained hard, and he had this fatal accident. I have no words to say what we feel.
It was the beginning of a five-year trip to hell and back for Kozakar, who suffered post-traumatic stress disorder. Kozakar survived multiple attempts to kill himself and is now a crusader for ending the stigma of PTSD. His motto? It's not weak to speak. The 44-year-old finally turned his life around at his cabin in the wilderness near Lillooet, BC. He wants to make the surrounding land a healing sanctuary for first responders afflicted with PTSD. He calls it Camp My Way. Last year in Canada, at least 56 police, fire, ambulance, and military personnel died of suicide. In November, as the snow fell in the Whistler Olympic Plaza, Kozakar told the Breaker his story beside the memorial to Nodar Kermatashvili.
The week leading up to the Olympics, I had the opportunity to meet Nodar Kermatashvili because he had crashed up in corner 12 and responded to that crash in corner 16 two times and had the opportunity to shake hands with the kid. The look of determination on his face, the excitement to cross that finish line, he was, I saw a warrior in that kid. I was really proud of him for getting back up on that sled and trying again and again and again. Opening day of the Vancouver 2010 Winter Olympics, we were all pretty excited. It's the opening day of the games, and it's a moment we had been waiting for almost 3 years. Unfortunately, that was a rough day for the entire world because this time Nodar didn't crash higher up in the track where he had crashed previously that week. He had he made it through corner 12 through the 50-50, and he had come down through into corner 16, hit the roof, shot down into the short wall. And immediately I started running towards the exit of 16. At that point is when I witnessed this warrior exit the track and collide with a solid steel post at 153 kilometers an hour. My partner and I responded to that immediately. It was the 1080 code 3, corner 16. We got EHS to come code 3 right away. We pulled Nodar out of the gator pit, performed CPR on Nodar for a few minutes until EHS showed up, and continued doing CPR in the ambulance all the way over to the polyclinic, where we worked on him for another hour, and ultimately, there was nothing more that we could do to help to bring this kid back from this accident. You know, of all my years of training as a firefighter, a volunteer ski patroller, and as an emergency medical responder, we're trained how to serve the public, how to protect the public, how to preserve the public, get the public, the patient, to a higher level of care. But what we're not trained in is what to recognize within self and what could potentially happen to you when dealing with one tragedy or many, cumulative. after this accident, well, I shouldn't call it an accident, after this crime, tragedy, I wasn't prepared for what was going to happen to me next. And over the course of, the next 2 weeks, things just for me got worse and worse and worse. I wasn't sleeping at night. I had to show up to work the next day. I had to respond to crash after crash after crash. And as I'm responding to each of the crashes, my nerves were uncontrollable. The sights and sounds that I heard of the athlete's family on scene screaming, the sirens, the overwhelming amount of guilt that set in for me became actually completely unbearable, because I took responsibility, because I knew this was easily something that could have been prevented, and I felt that because I kept my mouth shut, I felt that this was my fault, and this was the feeling that I wasn't, I didn't have control of. So, lack of sleep over the next few days, watching all the people celebrating, partying, having a nice time, when just a few days ago there was a kid who was killed. It just didn't seem very humane to see, to feel this and to see this. And nobody could see how I felt, and I wasn't prepared to tell anybody, because I needed my job, and I felt, you know what, I'll toughen through this, I'll get through this, everything will be fine, which was the biggest mistake I made in my life. Because 1 hour after we won the gold medal, I went to try to end my life. I couldn't take the pain, I couldn't take the guilt, I couldn't take the overwhelming amount of shame. I couldn't bear with the thoughts and the uncontrollable amount of everything all at once. Not understanding why. You know, what I found the biggest problem wasn't that somebody came to me that moment. It was, why wasn't I trained as a first responder? Why didn't WorkSafe BC or any of the British Columbia Justice Institute training with fire rescue or ski patrol? Why wasn't self-care, self-awareness? Why is there not a chapter on post-traumatic stress disorder? And I want to make it very clear also that this is a wrong diagnosis to be calling post-traumatic stress a disorder, because it's not a disorder, it's an injury.
Kozakar marked the 8th anniversary of the Vancouver Olympics and Kumaritashvili's tragic death in Vancouver on February the 10th. Kozakar and his supporters from the Together We Can Addiction and Recovery Society turned heads in Stanley Park, where they flipped a 400-pound tire around the seawall for the rest of the day and into the night. They set out from the Olympic Cauldron at Jack Poole Plaza. One of the guests was Shane Simpson, the NDP MLA for Vancouver Hastings and Minister of Social Development and Poverty Reduction. In early 2017, when he was the Labour critic in the NDP shadow cabinet, Simpson introduced a bill to cut red tape and fast-track workers' compensation for first responders afflicted with PTSD. The BC Liberal government did not pass the bill. But the NDP is now in power, and Simpson says the government is planning to make progress.
Well, it is an issue. It's a priority for our government to deal with the question of PTSD and a presumptive clause for first responders in particular. And I know the Minister of Labor, Harry Baines, is working on that issue now. And I'm very hopeful that we'll be able to take some meaningful action on that this year. And I know that that's the intention, and it's just a matter of putting the pieces together. So I'm looking forward to that legislation when the Minister is ready to bring it forward, and I anticipate this year.
But as John Horgan has said before, help is on the way.
I think that that's a fair comment, that we're looking at that. We know that first responders, you know, when you have a crisis in your home, when somebody you love has a heart attack, the first person you want to see is that person coming through the door who can help you to put out the fire or help your loved one. And first responders, we know they need support too, and this is an initiative that will support them. We particularly see it with the opioid crisis that is happening, and with paramedics and just the very difficult time they have every day dealing with this crisis and the emotional impact that has. And we need to make sure we're supporting those people who support us every day.
Read more about Terence Kozakar and his struggles. Read the two-part feature in the Breaker.News, which includes a link to Kozakar's Camp My Way. Anyone who feels distress can call 911. The 24-hour crisis line, such as 1-800-SUICIDE in Canada or 1-800-273-TALK in the USA, or visit a hospital emergency room. People are ready to help. Every week, we end the Breaker.News podcast on a tasty note by awarding the goodness of a virtual Nanaimo bar to a deserving person or organization that has made a difference. A virtual version of the province's favorite dessert bar goes this week to Premier John Horgan for moving BC's Family Day statutory holiday to the third Monday of February, beginning in 2019. It will take place on February 18th, 2019, the same day as Family Day in Alberta and the same day as President's Day in Washington State. It was Premier Christy Clark who gave BC a Family Day holiday on the second Monday of February in 2013, for all the wrong reasons. That was an election year, and the BC Liberals were catering to ski resort owners and Chinese voters. It created a sort of Chinese New Year long weekend. Don't forget, the BC Liberals created a plan in 2011 to target ethnic voters in key ridings on the road to the 2013 provincial election. Ski resorts will survive. Their advertising is eligible for public subsidies, and tourism from China continues to grow. You can nominate someone for a virtual Nanaimo bar. Send us an email to bob@thebreaker.news. Well, that's it for the Breaker.News podcast for February 11th, 2018. I'm Bob Mackin. Thanks for joining me. Send me your feedback and send me your story ideas. Email bob@thebreaker.news. That's bob@thebreaker.news. Bookmark thebreaker.news, and you can also find us at thebreaker.ca. Sign up for the email newsletter and get updates to your inbox. For news as it happens, follow The Breaker News on Twitter and visit TheBreaker.News on Facebook. And you can support The Breaker for as little as $2 a month. Until the end of March, to celebrate the PyeongChang 2018 Winter Olympics, every new subscriber will receive a free copy of the ebook Red Mittens and Red Ink. It's the true story of the Vancouver Olympics. By yours truly, Bob Mackin. For more information, go to patreon.com/thebreakernews. That's patreon.com/thebreakernews. Until next week.